Welcome to Baterson. We make up stories, improvise, and record it live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Casey, and my source is Consider the Lobster and Other Essays by David Foster Wallace.
My name is Ben, and my source is The Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
My name is Mike, and my source is Killing Hope, U.S. Military and CIA Interventions Since World War II by William Blum.
My name is Drew, and my source is Seeing with Fresh Eyes, Meaning, Space, Data, Truth by Edward Tufte.
We will now choose a performer at random, and that performer is...
Drew, that's me. All right, flipping to a random page of Seeing with Fresh Eyes, Meaning, Space, Data, Truth by Edward Tufte. Big company, polluted river.
The old paper mill had been closed for 20 years, but the site was off limits to everyone in town.
They put up a big fence around it, and they had signs that threatened legal action and all kinds of things for anybody who traversed the property line.
That on Halloween nights, the kids would go up to the mill and dare each other to go inside.
One Halloween, Cherry, aged 15, and his girlfriend, Madeline, also aged 15, both dressed as robots, actually crossed the fence. They wandered into the dark, forbidden zone of the old paper mill.
Cherry and...
Madeline.
Madeline. Cherry and Madeline had been working on their robot costumes all year, and they were really decked out. They looked like honest-to-God futuristic android robots.
They radiated a lot of light out of buttons and sensor-looking things. So they felt kind of safe going into this very dark, forbidden zone.
They made robot jokes with each other as they went to kind of, as they went deeper and deeper, they got more and more nervous, but they didn't let on doing robot moves and having robot hugs and kisses. They were a fairly new couple. They'd only been dating for a couple of months, and they were
Cherry
really into each other.
Had never kissed anyone. And so this was the first relationship Cherry had ever been in. And this was the best chance Cherry thought he'd have to make a move.
This was a paper mill, is that right?
Yes.
The building itself, you know, 20 years closed, was just sort of in that transition period from a closed down, actually operating business and a completely hollowed out, you know, empty structure. It was kind of in the most dangerous period where there were still floors and there were still like some desks and debris around, but things had deteriorated and rotted and animals had been living in it. So it was actually a pretty dangerous place and a pretty polluted place. There was a lot of leftover chemicals and all kinds of unexplored and unexamined nooks and crannies to the structure. So it was actually really true when the city said, this is dangerous and you should stay out. But that didn't stop Cherry and Madeline, who had the hubris of youth coursing through their veins.
And the courage of robots.
Because they really embraced these personas. They'd spent so much time working on the costumes, thinking about the backstory, getting everything ready, that they really stepped into it. They were inhabiting these roles of these two robots.
And this is what Madeline loved about their relationship. She was a theater kid. Cherry, not so much, but they had this sort of shared language of creativity, and this was the most kind of like in-character role-playing they'd ever done. Madeline was having the time of her life.
And Cherry was thrilled by that because he hadn't been in a relationship before, but this relationship with Madeline was everything that he dreamed of. And he had to admit that he was thinking, he knew it was, they were young, they were just into high school, and he knew it sounded he knew how it probably looked from the outside, but he really thought that he wanted to spend the rest of his life with Madeline. No one had ever made him feel this way. And he just loved everything she did, everything she said. He loved everything about her.
Like, it doesn't matter if from the outside anyone else would think that a 15-year-old who feels that way has no idea what that feeling actually is. To him, it was as true as gravity.
And he was thinking about this as he watched. Madeline was also very daring, really bold. And he was watching her walk on a kind of catwalk above these huge vats of chemicals that were still full of chemicals in the factory. They smelled really bad, and she was doing pirouettes and showing off and doing jumps and hanging from the bars above the catwalk. And he just was staring at her with love in his heart.
Madeline, for her part, she liked Cherry a whole lot. It was a fantastic relationship. As we said, it was he was one of the rare people that could go toe-to-toe with her on all kinds of flights of fancy and goofy character work. But she didn't really have any plans to stick around in this town after she graduated high school. She had her sights on New York and a theater career, and was just, she thought of Cherry as a really wonderful and lovely person, but she was not imagining a family. She was not imagining a long-term partnership with him.
Suddenly, as Cherry was watching Madeline pirouette across this catwalk, he heard voices from behind him, a couple of deep voices, and he panicked for a second, and he whispered, "Madeline, Madeline."
She turned around when he said that, and was sort of mid twirl when he had said her name, and she stopped to look at him and stumbled over an old toolbox that was set up on the catwalk and fell over the side of the catwalk fully into a vat of chemicals.
She disappeared below the surface completely. It was far more liquid and you know, it almost looked like a solid surface because of all the debris and dust and crap on the surface of the liquid, but it turned out to be quite...
He could see into it. It was only like a few feet tall.
No, it was deep. You're asking?
He's on the ground below, or is he up on the catwalk too?
I thought of him as like on a ledge near the catwalk, looking down on the vet.
Okay, and you thought of him because that's where he was.
And the voices were behind him also.
Yeah.
At ledge height.
Yes.
There was a control booth nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And he screamed, "Madeline!" And he knew there were voices behind him, and he said, "Help, help, 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 help me get her out." And then he ran down the catwalk, and he saw her floating, arms and legs in like forming a big X, and her very cardboardy outfit was now keeping her up at the top after she plunged underneath when she first fell. She was now floating at the top and spitting goop out of her mouth. And he said, "Are you there? Can you hear me?" And she said, "Yeah, yeah, get me out of here."
And he was looking around for a way to get her out of there. And he heard footsteps again coming down the catwalk now. And he turned to see these two security guards. And they rushed at him and grabbed him and started dragging him away. "So you're not supposed to be in here. You're coming with us."
He said, no, my friend's in there. You have to help me get my friend out." And they were like, "We've heard that. Sure, kid, sure. We've heard that before.
Everybody's got a friend in the vat."
And they dragged him away, and he struggled, and finally he broke free, and he ran back up the catwalk, and the security guards chased him. And when they got back to him this time, then they saw Madeline in the vat, and they freaked out, and they panicked, and they looked around.
They said, "Don't touch her!" And they ran away.
But and he wasn't going to listen to them, and started scouring around the room for some kind of rope or long stick or pole or anything he could like get down there to help her.
And he couldn't find it. So he jumped down and wrapped his body around the rim of the vat. And it hurt like crazy. But he managed to just hang on and not fall either into the vat or outside and slide down. He was clinging to the rim. And he said, "I'm on the rim." And she said, "Good jump. Can you get me out of here?" And he's like, "I'm afraid to move. I might fall in."
Madeline couldn't swim. She was only by luck of her buoyant costume was above water and breathing. But her skin was starting to discolor a little bit, she noticed, and she was starting to panic about that. And Cherry noticed as well and felt a panic rising in him and knew that he needed to come to some sort of approach to get her out of this.
At just that moment, he heard a mechanical noise above him, and he saw some chains moving and some wheels turning and things moving around. And he looked over and he saw the two security guards in the control booth, and they started lowering a huge grappling hook type device from the ceiling above and lowered it into the, at first they lowered it on top of Madeline by accident, pushed her under the surface again. And then they corrected and she floated back up and they adjusted the hook, got it under her and dragged her up out of the chemicals. And
she was dripping and terrified. They got her onto the floor next to the vat. Cherry climbed down and they all sort of gathered around.
They called 911. They took her to the ER. They both got some juvenile punishments. Her skin was forever stained. Her family moved away from town before she graduated. It was like the next year. Fresh start. Not to New York, but to Chicago. Big theater town. And they kept in touch for a little while. Drifted apart.
She got some interesting parts due to the skin discoloration and had a moderately successful career doing that sort of work.
And had an agent who was really rooting for her to get roles that had nothing to do with the fact that she had visible discoloration like on her face that you could see from the audience. You know, she could just be a character and not like a burn victim and all those things. But pretty much those were the roles that she got. Someone who had been hurt, someone who was a villain. About 10 years after the event, she's in her mid-20s. Someone comes up to her dressing room after she did a one-woman show. She just performed a one-woman show about this experience of trying to be an actor who looks a certain way and can't just play a quote-unquote normal person. And
she had taken some artistic liberties with the show, and she actually did not explain honestly what led to her skin being discolored. In the show, she said that she was born with all of this discolored skin, and she didn't actually convey the story of what had happened at the paper mill that night.
Cherry walked up to her at the meet and greet table after the show and said, "So you were born with that discoloration?" She didn't recognize him. And she said, yeah, it's been with me a long time, let's just say that." And Cherry, who was wearing sandals at the time, took one of his sandals off and kind of propped his foot up onto the table and said, "Looks a lot like that, doesn't it?" And one of his feet had actually dipped into the chemicals in the vat, and he had not mentioned that that night. He didn't want to distract from the medical care that she was receiving. He was so worried about her. And she saw his foot, saw the same sort of violety, blue-purple kind of hue that she knew so well from much of her own body, and her mouth dropped open.
And They stayed up all night hanging out, talking, reconnecting.
They got kicked out of the theater. They just talked directly outside the building. They went to a 24-hour diner and got like egg fries, where you get like a pile of fries and a really runny egg on top
and bacon. The connection was as if it had never ceased. They did their robot voices.
They were doing characters. egg fries so good.
They got kicked out of the diner.
Better material than that.
That was where they started, but that wasn't where they ended.
And it turns out that Cherry had moved to Chicago just recently. He had stayed home and built a life for himself, but he always just felt incomplete. And he didn't admit to himself that he moved to Chicago with the hopes of reconnecting with Madeline, but that was honestly the truth. That was basically why he was there. And he always felt like there had just been this hole in his heart since they parted ways. And he was absolutely ecstatic to have her back in his life. And they started dating again. He tried not to come on too strong. He took his time, and it ended up working out that they got back together.
And it worked out for Madeline too. She'd been sleeping with her agent on and off, and that had been just a really like weird, it wasn't bad, but it was just complicated. And so she was able, it gave her the impetus to kind of end that and get into something she was really excited about again.
Cherry was still a kiss virgin. He'd had sex with 9 people, but he had still kissed no one. He was still saving his lips for her. And when he thought back on that, that's when he realized that's really why he moved to Chicago. He couldn't deny it anymore. It was because of her.
And he told her that, and it just broke her heart. It broke her heart that he had been saving himself in that very specific way for her all these years. And it made her feel really special and important, and it also made her a little bit skeptical.
One day they were strolling by the river, and he kept itching his foot, and she asked him, "What's going on with your foot?" And he said, "I just got like a little spot of something, a little rash or something like that." And she looked at it, and it was in the blue area of his foot, and it didn't look good to her. It looked like maybe something a dermatologist should check out, and she said as much, and he grudgingly made an appointment and saw the dermatologist, and the dermatologist took a biopsy, and turned out that Cherry, in fact, had cancer on his foot.
And not just any cancer, a very aggressive melanoma carcinoma blend that was really, really aggressive.
And seemed to be tied to the skin discoloration. Like the dermatologist had never seen anything like it. The other doctors, the oncologist, had never seen anything like it. But they said, yeah, the kind of chemicals in a mill like that can definitely have a carcinogenic effect. And, you know,
Madeline got tested right away when she heard about this, but she was clean somehow, even though she had these markings all over her body. None of her tests, they biopsied several parts of her skin, ran all sorts of tests, and they found no evidence.
The diagnosis had kind of lent a new urgency to their relationship, and both of them sort of leaned into it a little harder. Cherry's future was pretty uncertain. He started chemotherapy and other treatments. Had the particular spot removed surgically, and he was doing regular scans. But the whole connection between them sort of took on an urgency.
And
one time that he was getting treatment, he was plugged into a lot of stuff. He had the tube going into his port, and he had a blood pressure cuff on, and he had also twisted his ankle, so he had a big boot on his foot, and basically he looked like a robot with all of this apparatus on him. And Madeline tried talking to him in the robot voice.
And he didn't respond in the robot voice. Yeah. For the first time, he was too sort of broken down by the treatment and just sort of sad about everything. And
he said, "We're never going to kiss, are we?" And she said, "What do you mean?" She was totally stunned. She had felt closer to him since the diagnosis, but still felt skeptical. And
she was, and the main reason she was skeptical was that she felt like this kiss had now been weighted so heavily that she felt like there was no way either it was going to blow his mind in some way that was going to create an unhealthy asymmetry in the relationship where he was going to be too affected, or it was going to be this disappointment. He'd built it up so much for so many years that there was no way that it could live up to it. So she felt in a bind where it seemed weird for them to continue on like this without kissing, but it seemed like a lose-lose situation to actually do it.
She tried a couple times to kiss him casually, like just even involuntarily, and sometimes on purpose just to get it out of the way. But he'd always shied away or
he wanted
away.
It to be perfect.
Yeah. He'd be like, no, not right now. It's just not right, you know?
So the delay just kept, it just, everything kept stacking pressure up and significance on this kiss.
And then cancer and the intensification and.
He said, "We're never going to do it." She said, "What do you mean?" And he said, it'll never be a perfect moment now. He had lost hope. He thought that his days were numbered. And
indeed they were. The scans started coming back. His cancer wasn't really improving. Her therapist agreed with her in the sense that the intensification of this moment was going to make it hard to get past. But her therapist felt like, you know, just gently suggesting that they cross that threshold repeatedly, that he might come around. And if that was something that they both wanted, that it might be a little awkward at first, but she shouldn't worry too much about it. And she carried on with that sort of approach.
So Madeline decided, she chewed on that for a while, and she thought it over. She thought she had a good way to talk to Cherry about it and make it happen and get past that and assure him and make it as special but not as loaded as possible. And she went home all ready to bring this to him. And when she went into the apartment, she found him unresponsive on the couch. And he was dead. He was not there any longer. And she was too late.
She was devastated, and her family and friends, you know, supported her as best they could through it. She stayed in Chicago for another 6 or 9 months, but too many things reminded her of him, and she did move to New York after that and tried to sort of get back on her feet as a performer. As an actor, she kept getting scans. They kept coming back clean.
She got a role unexpectedly. She got a role in a major motion picture, in a big movie. And it wasn't a big role, but she got a big paycheck for it. And she had been at peace with the discoloration of her skin for so long. It really had become a part of her identity and a part of, she was comfortable with it. She wasn't ashamed. She wasn't embarrassed. But she had to admit that it had really been holding her back from achieving her goals. And so she took most of the money that she made from this movie and actually had a full treatment on all of her skin to remove the discoloration and restore her skin to the original color that it had been before she fell in the vat.
The procedure.
She did her entire body except for her left foot.
The end.
The end.
The end.
Hey, Baderson Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at Baderson.com. And remember, if there's one thing a story can't do, it's cure cancer.